Southwest WA Drought Resilience Adoption and Innovation Hub acknowledges the traditional custodians throughout Western Australia and their continuing connection to the land, waters and community. It pays its respects to elders past and present and extends that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Hello, I'm Julianne Hill, Hub Adoption Manager. This podcast series on dry season responses is brought to you by the Southwest WA Drought Hub and funded through Future Drought Fund. In this series, we'll hear from growers and industry experts on managing dry season responses, ranging from early planning to tactical decision making as the season changes throughout the year and setting up for your following season.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Dry Season Resources podcast. This time around, we are going to be talking about technology, specifically a GGA innovation grant aiming to understand grower attitudes to digital technology. It's a fancy way of pretty much saying that GGA wanted to provide some context on the usefulness of the myriad of different in-paddock monitoring tools that are now available. There's a lot of digital tech out there. A lot of it's quite tricky. It's a bit complex. It can actually be a bit annoying, but some of it can actually also be really useful if we know how to use it. So GGA really wanted to get a bit of an idea of just how this technology works and how growers are implementing it on farm. In this particular episode, I am joined by three guests. So we've got a nice large chat going on today. I'm joined by Phil Honey from Stirlings to Coast Farmers, Roger Laws from CSRO, and Latham farmer Dylan Hirsch. I'm going to go around and slowly get everyone to introduce themselves. So if we can start with yourself, Phil, give us a little bit of an intro to who you are and your involvement with this project.
Yeah, so I'm Phil Honey, based down here in Albany on the south coast of Western Australia, and my role is Smart Farms Coordinator for Stirlings to Coast Farmers, a local grower group. So as part of my daily job, I talk and liaise with a range of stakeholders and farmers and advisors and look at ways to implement technology to improve their farm sustainability and productivity.
That was very succinct. I like it. You rehearsed that. Either that or you've got it ready to go. Over to you, Roger. Tell us about yourself and how you're involved with this innovation and technology project.
Sure. Thanks, Shannon. So I'm Roger Laws and I'm a research scientist with CSIRO, and I've had about 25 years experience working in digital ag technologies, and that includes things like yield mapping, precision agriculture, farm economics and statistics, as well as crop modelling. And I was the lead investigator on the CSIRO component of this project that we're discussing today.
And lucky last, over to you, Dylan, representing the farmers in this particular project. Tell us about yourself.
Dylan Hirsch, farmer at Latham, running a crop enterprise up here, and also a bit of a map nerd. Started when I was about 5 years old. I can remember on Microsoft Paint drawing maps of the farm. And I guess it stemmed from there. And nowadays, really interested in lots of the ways that some of those digital tools can help us plan our cropping plans on farm and how they can reinforce some of our anecdotal observations in field. So, really interested in this space.
All right, we're going to start off with, I think, a bit of an introduction to the project. So this was a GGA project led by Leiby Group, which is the area where Dylan is from, and Stirlings to Coast Farmers, which is who Phil works for. So maybe we start with you, Phil. Are you able to give us a bit of an overview of what actually this project was all about, what it was trying to achieve, what the point of it was?
Yeah, definitely. So I guess the challenge for a lot of people is there's a wide range of technologies available, and some of them talk and some of them don't. And quite often farmers are utilizing them in a single piece. So that is, one single app and then potentially looking at another, and nothing's really talking. So the GGA project with Leiby Group and Stirlings to Coast with CSIRO basically looked at what digital technologies were available. We did a bit of surveying behind the scenes, had a look at what apps people are using, how they're utilising that data to improve their decision-making, and ran through some of the data through tools such as AppSim NextGen, which Roger will be able to talk about in a lot more detail. And ultimately, the end game is can we get to the point where we can make a decision in advance and predict what that might happen rather than waiting for the end of the year and applying those learnings?
What are the barriers that exist? And I don't know who wants to take this. Anyone can answer it. But what are the barriers that exist to farmers adopting new pieces of tech and new technology on their farm? Maybe for you, Dylan, what stops you or makes you consider whether or not you should use something on farm?
Probably it's one thing for me to be able to use a bit of technology, but it's another thing for be able to communicate that and use that with consultants or employees on farm. So where some tools are really good for me to be able to visualise data and make some observations, but to be able to use that in decision-making and communicate that into whether that's a variable rate map or a instruction for employees or to try and use that information in conjunction with other information that's coming from on farm. Some of the tools struggle in terms of the way they're supported or connect with other devices. So yeah, there's a lot out there. It's just some of those tools really work well and are easy to use, and some are a bit finicky still. And I imagine, you know, farmers aren't known for their patience with digital technology, so they could be for many of us can be frustrating when they don't quite work the way we want.
Phil, you mentioned that part of this project was looking at attitudes towards ag tech. And as Dylan just said, some farmers' attitude is one that doesn't involve a lot of patience, which is something I can personally relate to when something doesn't work the way I want it to. But from the beginning, I guess maybe this is probably a question for you, Roger, what did we actually learn about the different attitudes farmers have towards ag tech and using these tools on farm?
I think the main learning we had was that if a technology will generate genuine benefit for the grower, they will adopt it. Now, if you want an example of one of those technologies, it's guidance. It makes life easier to use the machinery. You get fertilizer savings. The cost benefits are very clear. And the adoption rate is extremely high. Across the project, it was nearly 90%. Another technology that was widely used by nearly everybody were the weather services and the weather apps, and they were used to help with decisions related to logistics around spraying and day-to-day operations. In other words, the growers could identify what the benefit was, they could use the technology, they could make a decision, and they ran with it. What we found, though, was that other technologies, the link between what that technology does then the decision the grower has to make is nowhere near as clear or obvious, and the grower has to jump through many hurdles to get to that endpoint. So that basically just makes it incredibly complex and difficult and hard to determine where the value is for the grower. Things like soil moisture monitors, things like even the crop models and satellite imagery, they were all interesting. Growers wanted to engage. They actually have a really positive attitude to technology. But at the end of the day, it was like, well, you know, how did I change my farm management with this information? And if that was vague or they weren't sure, then understandably they moved on from that piece of technology.
Phil and Dylan, you guys are from two very different areas. You farm, or you know, you're based in two very different regions. Did you find that the tools growers used and growers were comfortable with varied from the Leeby region compared to the Stirling's to Coast region?
Yeah, definitely, Shannon. So I guess, you know, look, we do have two different farming enterprise type systems, which are quite distinctly different from each other. So we do have a higher rainfall pattern, and that obviously opens up opportunities to look just beyond broadacre cropping, but also livestock and everything else. So what we really identified in the surveying process is that there were some common things which we all utilised, and per se, you know, weather monitoring, pretty equal across both groups, really important. But things such as that, when it came down to apps, Leeby Group was a lot more advanced in a lot of the cropping, where we sort of had a mixture of cropping and livestock. So I guess it really depends on what that enterprise system is. And it's also in regards to general tech adoption in an area. in a lower or medium rainfall area, you are going to be monitoring those inputs probably a lot more higher, particularly where you can make cost savings. So the advantageous benefits of VRT is a no-brainer. So the adoption naturally will be higher. And you've got great support up there as well.
Yeah, the other one I'd add, you know, in the northern and eastern wheat belt, because our paddocks are becoming so large as we drive for efficiencies, the importance of being able to manage zones using data within the paddock is becoming more important so we can be able to micromanage our soil types, which were probably may have been originally separated by old fence lines and things like that. But nowadays we're trying to get the best of both worlds, which is the efficiencies of having large open paddocks, but being able to manage our soils within them. Whereas, you know, I imagine still down in the higher rainfall zones, you've still got smaller paddocks, still got livestock, there's fence lines. The zones within the paddock, although everyone will say that they vary, I think the variable rate technology and zone mapping seems to be of higher importance to growers in the north and east where we've got larger paddocks.
My understanding of how this all worked, and if I'm incorrect, I would love for someone to correct me, but the idea was that the technology was provided to the growers. The growers were then surveyed about how they used it, what their thoughts on it were, all those bits and pieces. But then some workshops were actually conducted as well to find a bit more information on their opinions about the different types of tech. What were some of the key, I guess, revelations that came out of those workshops?
I think one of the main revelation was that when we deployed the tech onto farms, the growers were really interested in enhancing their productivity, looking for efficiencies, improving what they do. It then just comes down to whether the technology actually delivers to the growers' expectations. And when it does, it's adopted.
How about yourself, Phil? Were there any, I guess, revelations or things that you learned from those surveys or workshops? Anything that surprised you that the growers were saying about their ability to adapt technology?
Yeah, look, yes and no, ultimately, at the end of the day. I think we all understand the importance of great support. And if we haven't got support to adopt these technologies, then they're less likely to be adopted. But probably one of the biggest revelations really was actually how important it was to have that value proposition at the end of the day. So if you are looking at an NDVI imagery, we know that there's variation, but people aren't likely, well, particularly down our way, likely to adopt variable rate unless they can work out, well, look, if we vary that paddock by X amount of fertilizer across these zones, we will actually get this savings, then they're less likely to adopt it. So having that defined value proposition is really important.
Sounds like it all comes down to dollars and cents at the end of the day, or at least being able to have something really concrete to be able to show for the benefits of using this tech. Dylan, I feel like I've left it a bit late, but you are a grower who uses technology, so I feel like I should probably ask you what it is you use and why and what the benefits are.
Yeah, it's actually a little bit tricky question to ask, because when we think of technology, a lot of technology I take for granted is just standard stuff that everyone uses, and we don't recognise that there's some really interesting, cool technology used within ag these days. So, yeah, of course, as Roger mentioned, we've been using GPS guidance machinery for a long time on the farm. That we've been into variable rate technology and then out, as, you know, there's software and hardware issues that requirements that puts on machines. We're back into it now. The other one we're finding is, you know, so we've got, you know, weather monitoring. We've got being able to monitor our performance of our fields these days by having a better understanding of the rainfall variability across our fields, because being in that strictly a rainfall-driven production zone, you know, we've got a combination of more weather stations across the region. We've got the Bureau's got radar imagery, which indicates the variability within rainfall events. So it enables us to have a better tracking of the performance of our yields across our paddocks and what those water efficiencies are like, as well as explain some of those anecdotal observations for, you know, why, you know, one end of the farm might have performed better than others. And yeah, the other one is trying to look at, yeah, so variable, we're going back into variable rate technology using a mixture of soil type, biomass imagery from remote sensing technology, raw soil coring data, and our yield mats, and trying to combine all that information together, which there's still no perfect answer or perfect way to combine that data, but we're certainly using in conjunction with consultants and other growers to try and make those decisions, to be able to try and estimate where we're going to get best bang for buck with our fertiliser spend and our seed rate spend across our farm. So there's other more precise technology where we're also using. The GPS technology we've got on farm now is at a level where we can precisely near row or on row or inter row, on row sow, which opens up another sort of door that we're trying to investigate and quantify the possibilities there. So another technology is the camera spraying technology to be able to, one is to be able to more precisely manage our chemical use across the farm and also record and monitor our weed locations long term to be able to manage them. So, yeah, compared to where we were 15 years ago, I guess when we were just adopting GPS guidance technology, there's a fair bit going on now where we can, some of that farm monitoring can be recorded and tracked long term to be able to back up our anecdotal decisions. So, yeah, for us as a farmer, I think we are more on the early adopter side of things. So, and I certainly see the benefits for those farmers that are wanting to see what we do. And I think what I noticed from this project was hearing some of the other farmer attitudes about this, in that some of this technology, whether it's a weather station network or soil probes or remote sensing tools, we do need industry support and backup to be able to help us use these tools. So, yeah, it's trying to make this technology appeal to not only the farmers but also people supporting us.
Dylan, I want to touch on one of the things you mentioned there. You're talking about how you've been in and out of using variable rate and you're back into it now. Variable rate's, you know, one piece of tech, but you mentioned, I think, about four other pieces of tech that you use to make your variable rate decisions. So it sounds like a lot of this tech, it's not standalone. There's a lot of different things that all feed into each other. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's an overwhelming thing, and it would explain a lot of the apprehension from growers to be out entering this tech. For example, the variable rate technology we use is a mapping service by a major machinery company to make those maps, and it'll has an algorithm to say import a yield map to make that map. But we want to also bring our soil testing results into that. So there's no easy way to drag multiple. A lot of these systems can enable integrated support for one type of monitoring service, but often we're trying to make these decisions based on multiple different, I guess, data inputs. And that requires at currently for everything that we want to do it the way we want to, a certainly level of, you know, human ability to an adjustment to make these maps. So at the moment, there is a bit of an 80-20 rule. Some of the programs are pretty good at what they do, but to get to a level where we think we want the bang for buck, it requires still a fair amount of time to sit down and make those maps, to pull in from the satellite remote sensing and our yield map and our soil nutrition maps together. There are certainly consultants that spend a lot of their time doing that and do it very well. So it's not an easy or a simple process by any means yet.
Yet. Phil, was that something you found with growers in your area and farmers in your area, that combining all of these different tools together was a barrier to them using any of them?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely, Shannon. So interoperability is the official term that industry uses. It is a silly word. It's been an issue that Roger could probably attest to. It's been an issue since when he started dealing with precision ag right from the very start. So the simplicity is that at the end of the day, things are improving, and ultimately machinery dealers and software integrators are starting to get there. But Dylan's absolutely right. We can look at NDVI imagery, for example, and we know that higher low biomass exists across a paddock, but they might exist due to different reasons. You know, it might be elevation and frost. It might be, water accumulation and pooling. You know, there's a range of different things. And sometimes these might even flip-flop depending on the year that it is as well. So having that human interaction at the end of the day is really important, as is as much being able to source data from multiple sources.
I might send over to you, Roger, and I don't know if this is one that you can answer, but from the workshops and the surveys, did you find any information on the different sorts of decisions that growers make based on the info that they're gleaning from these tools? Like, were they actually changing their decisions, changing their practices, changing what they're doing, and how?
Yeah, they were, particularly when it was tied to logistics. So if you were looking at a spraying event, there was a lot of interest in the near-term forecasts and planning the week's operations. So, and growers were changing what they would do based on what those near-term weather forecasts were saying. And then the local MET data would help them understand whether or not they could spray or couldn't spray on a given day, because that affects herbicide efficacy. It affects the likelihood that you might create a problem with a neighbouring crop with overspray or something like that. So that was the one that was talked about at length in terms of tangible evidence that a decision was being made with the technology that the growers could relate to. There was plenty of discussion about things like yield maps and NDVI imagery. But a bit like how Dylan and Phil described, it was a case of you start ending up with data overload, and it's difficult to integrate all of that information and then come to a clear decision. And then when you've got interoperability issues, which we've already talked about, adding to that, it can be confusing, and often the easiest thing to do is continue with what you're doing right now because, well, that works. When the technology links to a decision, growers use it really, really well and really quickly.
Was there anything that growers who were surveyed or took part in the workshops mentioned or highlighted that was missing? Tools that they want access to, technology that they want access to that they don't think exists or doesn't work properly that they want improved?
Yeah, they actually wanted something to assist with prediction of pest outbreaks, disease outbreaks, and potentially even predicting future weed problems. There was a big emphasis on tell me what's going to happen before it happens. Now, the technology is not there yet. That's the reality. To get to that point would require considerable investment, but there was an extreme amount of excitement on sort of understanding, well, what's the, you know, am I going to wind up with powdery mildew this year because of the seasonal conditions? Do I need those extra sprays, those extra fungicide sprays over canola, or can I get away not applying those sprays? If the technology could integrate to those sort of live, active decisions that ultimately might save farmers time and money, then that would be taken up very quickly.
How about you, Dylan? If you could request some tech, request a tool to be used on farm that would, I don't know, help you solve all of your world problems, what would you like created if you could request anything out there?
Would probably be to do with people, and that would be a industry-funded body of people that were responsible for the standardising and what's the fancy word, Phil, that you said before, interoperability?
Can we just call it, like, using things together, because that sounds way less complicated.
Yeah, I like that phrase better, Shannon. I think if we can increase our interoperability and set some standards to enable our sensing data to talk and feed into each other, then we'll get to a stage where more farmers will be, yeah, using these tools and certainly happy to use them.
Phil, anything from the growers in your area or the farmers in your area? You do have livestock, you know, a heavier proportion of livestock people in your area compared to where Dylan is as well. So is there anything that they brought up combining the livestock into it that they would want access to?
I think it's the crystal ball, full stop, Shannon. it might sound a little bit like a pipe dream, but for us, you know, look, we can get rain over harvest. So the ability to utilise soil moisture and, you know, even soil moisture probes to help determine whether we can grow a summer crop is really quite good. But look, yeah, basically, and I think everyone's results basically said, yeah, look, we want something that could help us tell us what we need to do, when we need to do it, aggregate all the data and ultimately be cheap or low cost is the pipe dream. But yeah, help improve efficiencies and productivity and yeah, help me make the best bang for my buck and be sustainable in the process, whether it's selecting my rotations moving forward or based on soil type or even my varieties. So
to finish off with, where to next with this project? We've got all this information, you've done these surveys, you've done these workshops, you've got all of this information about bringing on and using technology and using these tools. What do we do with that information now that we have it?
I think now that we've got that information, Shannon, there's an opportunity to say, look, what we need is the interoperability question and the using multiple data layers to make decisions was very clear. That's sort of the big highlight from the project to get more adoption of this kit. So that's actually a service provision across the industry. That means creating this capacity for businesses to service the growers' need to provide that service in a very timely manner, bearing in mind that everybody's going to want that service at seeding during spraying and at harvest. So there's going to be a huge demand for relatively short periods during the season. And if the industry's service providers can organise around that, that would certainly assist in creating those sort of products that Dylan was after, because it can all be done with fairly potent pieces of software, but they aren't pieces of software that you would ever, as a grower, want to engage with or play with.
Dylan, Phil, Roger, thank you so much for joining me on the Dry Season Resources podcast. Before we do head off, I do just want to remind everyone of the GGA Dry Season Resources newsletter that is available. hub.gga.org.au is where you'll find that. Lots of resources to help you manage dry seasons. More information on every single topic that has ever been discussed on this podcast will be found on the website. Thank you for joining us, and we will talk to you next time.
Just been listening to the Southwest WA Hub's Limited Dry Season podcast series. For further support for decision making through dry periods, the Drought Hub website features a collection of resources for the livestock, grains, and horticultural industries. You can find them under the resources tab on the Hub website at hub.gga.org.au.
This episode has been brought to you by the Southwest WA Drought Hub, funded by the Future Drought Fund. If you or someone you know is in crisis, contact Lifeline on 131114.